Morning. Alrighty, feast days, Passover, unleavened bread, all this in the way that it functioned and was set up under the law as part of the tabernacle temple system, which again has reference to us in our study of the Christian in the tabernacle, why these feasts, we're going through and figuring out why. And remember, everything that was written for our instruction, but everything that was under the law, Hebrews 9 and 10 makes it pretty clear, was a foreshadow of things in reference to Christ and the church. But, you know, one verse we haven't looked at, I think we probably should. Let's go to Colossians chapter 2, just in reference to what we're doing here, why we're going through this study on tabernacle and Christian in particular. This one will address feast and festival days. Okay, if you go to Colossians chapter 2, verse 16, it says, "Therefore, let no one act as your judge in regard to food or drink, or in respect to a festival, or a new moon, or a Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow." Sounds very similar to what the book of Hebrews states, right? "Which are a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ." See, so everything is really about Jesus Christ, and that dovetails nicely with what John and the Spirit heard in Revelation 19, first part of verse 10. The testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy, right? So everything that has to do with the law, the tabernacle system, and that would include the feast days, the festivals, is going to have something to do with Christ and with the church, right? So that's why we, again, are looking at this. And last week I intend to do something very quickly. It ate up most of the class, and that was just taking a look at the Passover, the day that Jesus died, the actual true Passover lamb, the fulfillment of the law of the Passover, which was set up when they were in Egypt to be delivered, a reminder of them being delivered from slavery and oppression. And that's what Jesus did for us as the offering of the Passover lamb. Is he delivered us from slavery and from oppression, right? You know, we were held captive by a guy. You remember that? We're doing his will, just like the Israelites were doing the will of Pharaoh. Well, actually, we know we were held captive to the will of Satan before Christ freed us in our obedience to the gospel. So he was the Passover lamb that was offered, and he died on Passover day. And we looked at John 19, and you know, some of that may have been a little unclear for you guys. The real thing that I want you to understand is that why I was showing you that is that most people, when it comes to the death of Jesus and the time frame from when he died until he came out of the tomb, you know, they say he died on a Friday, so they call that Good Friday, and he came out on Sunday. And I was just trying to show you that Jesus himself said that no sign, when they were wanting to know really, you know, what's going on here, who are you, and everything involved around that, he said in the gospel accounts, he said, "No sign will be given you except the sign of Jonah." How many of you guys remember that? And what was that sign of Jonah? He said, three days, three nights in the belly of the earth. Okay, just like Jonah was 3 days, 2 nights in the belly of the sea monster. Okay, the large fish, whatever it was. Okay. Well, and I just went through and showed you how that, you can't get 3 days and three nights out of Jesus being on the cross on Friday. You just can't. You're going to see some fancy shuffling done by some people. And of course, what I'm saying right now, you need to understand, a large majority of the people hear this online are going to think I am a major blasphemer for saying what I'm saying right now. You got to understand that. Okay? So, again, I just told you, you know, he had to be down off that cross. We went through John 19. And in the tomb, before sun went down, because with the setting of the sun ended the day and began a new one, right? We talked about the timing, how that was done. And it talks about back in John 19:14, it's a day of preparation for the Passover, and all those preparations on Passover would be done that day. So Passover would also be a day of preparation. Then later on in John 19:31, it says that they had to get him down because that Sabbath was a high day, and it was a day of preparation before that Sabbath, that high day. And I explained to you, if you know your feasts, You know Passover, you know everything associated with that. The first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread was a holy convocation, is what the New American Standard calls it. It's a Mikra Kodesh, which means a solemn assembly, a calling out, a solemn assembly. And there was to be no work done. So it was like a Sabbath day. So that's why it's called for the Sabbath day, and that was a high day. Because it's a reference to what would be a day that they would operate under the, we'll say, the principles of a Sabbath day. No work. See? So when people read that, they read that and they go, okay, so they had to get him down to the Sabbath day. So that proves Jesus was on the cross on Friday because they had to get him down before the Sabbath. You see what I'm getting at? Because what follows Friday in our calendar week? What day is that? Saturday, right? Okay, what day under the law? And by the way, what day is Saturday in the numbering of the days of the week, even in our calendar? Seventh day. What was the Sabbath day under the law? Seventh day. So you see how they think it's Friday, because it's going to be Saturday, which is the Sabbath. And of course, the first day of the week that followed after the Sabbath was the day that Jesus came out of the tomb. So they say he had to be on the cross on a Friday, so he'd be, you know, be off before the sun went down, so they wouldn't violate the Sabbath principle. And then, of course, the day after that would be the first day of the week. So that's how they compute that Jesus was on the cross on a Friday. But they, most people aren't understanding. I think those that have a little bit more training understand. But most people, average Joe and Jane, we'll just say, out there in religious organizations, okay, don't understand the Feast of Unleavened Bread at all. They'll read about it, and they'll just kind of skim over it and don't even ask a question. I know, because I did it for years. I'm just giving you my experience. That's B.C., before Christ. I was associated with a religious organization. Okay, but I didn't know any of that stuff. I mean, we'd read these passages, you know, when you talk about Palm Sunday and all that and Passover. Right over the Feast of Unleavened Bread, nobody would ever raise their hand and go, hey, what's the Feast of Unleavened Bread? Me included. Okay? Meant nothing, really. But if you understand that, you can now go back and say, okay, the 14th could fall on any day of the week because it's a day in the month. It's a date. Okay, and with the moving of the calendar. And Brad, is Brad here? I heard him. Where is he? Is he back there? Oh. Brad, did you bring those calendar things with you?
I bought some Wednesday night.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. I'm just checking. I left mine at home, so. Here, and I'll announce what Brad's talking about for those of you who can't hear him online. Brad printed out a bunch of calendars online that have to do with the calendar months of the Hebrew or Jewish year. Okay? And it shows what they used to be called prior to the Babylonian captivity. Do you have some, John? Okay, that's one of them. But he had about two or three different ones, and a couple of them are really good because they, one of them had an overlap that showed the months, what their name was pre-Babylonian exile. Is that it, John? Thank you. But there's another one, too, that has a little deal with the month of Adar. Do you have that one? Is that one on there? Is that that's the one. Okay, if you want to get a copy this morning, John can get his copied off for you. Maybe Super Dave has one too. It won't be in color like the one Brad's printed, but it'll show you the months, and it'll show you what their name was prior to the Babylonian captivity, and it'll show you what that month was called after they came out. The month's names changed, just like we go by a Gregorian calendar. And our days of the week are named after Roman gods, essentially, or Roman holidays, okay? So that's what we operate under, just to show you how that works. All right? So if you get a look at that, you'll see the name of the months. All right? So in 19 years, about three times in a 19-year span, they would have to adjust the calendar because they operate on lunar cycles, and time in a year is based on what we call a solar cycle. Okay? So there'd be movement. So that's a day of the month that Passover would fall on, not a specific day of the week. You got to understand, there's also people out there that have manipulated calendars and all this, and the way they think about it, and they say, nope, it would be the same day every year, Passover. I'm telling you, it's out there. I don't know how they get that, but I've read it. I've seen it. All right? Now, the day of Passover is the 14th. When did the 14th begin according to the Jewish mindset?
Sundown.
Sundown. There's an old band in the old days said, hurry, sundown. All right? Sundown would come. New day. Right? Okay. If you go back and read your Passover stuff in Exodus 12, you'll see that they, 10 days to find a lamb, 4 days they keep it in the house, by the house. 14th day, kill the lamb, put the blood on the post, roast the lamb, eat the lamb. Okay, and if you pay close attention, they'd usually eat the lamb after dark. Just go and read Exodus 12. Okay. Now, when you look at when Jesus got the boys together and they celebrated the Passover and all that, it appears that they ate the meal after dark at the beginning of the day of Passover. So everything happened on the day of Passover. Mr. Wilson. Yes.
The month is when this happened.
Everything with the institution of the Lord's Supper and the last Passover meal that Jesus celebrated and the institution of the Lord's Supper was on the evening, that morning, that afternoon evening when it switched from the 13th to the 14th. That's when they got together. That's when they ate the Passover meal. That's when Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper. And you can track events through the gospel accounts. They go to the garden at night. They come to get him at night. He says, the power of darkness in this hour is yours. In darkness, they're actually in dark. You got firelight going. Peter denies Jesus 3 times during the night. Because what did Jesus say before the cock crows? You will deny me how many times? In the night, so you can start to track. So it's all happening on Passover. Passover would begin in the evening. Just to make it so we understand it. Okay, Mike, you got a question before I go any further. Just a second. Just a second.
Sorry.
No, that's me.
And that could be Friday? Or it wouldn't have to be Friday.
No, just be the 14th.
It could be Saturday.
It could be Saturday.
It could be...
Yeah.
Whatever. Friday. It's the 14th.
Correct. Correct. It's a date, not a day.
I'm sorry I wasn't here last week, so I'm not going to make you do a full repeat, but I don't think. So when the opposition to Jesus, when they wouldn't go into the praetorium, I guess what I'm saying is on the 14th, typically, when would you eat that Passover meal?
Okay, that's why I say you got to read Exodus 12 and come up with your own idea of what happens. Here's what I say. If you read that, all the preparations are done on the 14th. Slaughter of the lamb, that's between, it says at twilight, technically, there's commentators that say that would be between the two evenings. And the reason they say that is because in the temple tabernacle system, what was instituted was a morning and an evening sacrifice. Now, when we think evening, we think what? 6 o'clock or later, right? You know when the evening sacrifice was in the temple system? Anybody have any idea? No? Okay, go look. Go read. Pay attention. I'm going to tell you. It wasn't when you think it was. Okay? Not going to spoon feed you. You got to do some of this on your own. All right? Study. So the sacrifice, evening sacrifice, somewhere between 3 and 6 p.m., guys. Okay? You're all looking at it like, what? I got to go. There's your information. Okay? So that's usually when it would be offered. Okay? When did Jesus go on the cross according to the gospel accounts? When did he hang there? From about 3 to 6 p.m. approximately. You can go and track this. So, Luke's question. They got together on the 14th, the 13th, the day of the 13th, they're going through all the process, the night of the 14th, or the day of the 14th begins at sundown, they partake of the meal, Jesus goes to the garden to pray, here come the temple police, with some Romans, to get him, right? They haul him away, and he starts to go through the whole process, appearing before Pontius Pilate, the Sanhedrin, the leaders of the Sanhedrin, to Herod, back to Pontius Pilate. John 19 says it's about the sixth hour of the day when Pilate washes his hand and turns Jesus over to be crucified. Sixth hour of the day in the Jewish mindset would be about noon. Now you can go, and if you have a good study Bible, it'll tell you what the watches are at night and what the hours are during the day. And it's a time frame usually of about 3 hours. First watch, say approximately, you know, whatever. You can go and look. I've got to quit giving you guys everything. You've got to do some of this on your own. I'm trying to get you to get curious to go look on your own. So go find out what that is. Okay? All right? So you get that information, right? Watches and days. So you can read John 19 and see that Jesus is turned over for crucifixion about noon. And then you read through John 19 from verse 15 on, you see the crucifixion. All right? And it doesn't give you the hours that Jesus is on the cross in the Gospel of John. It just tells you when, approximately when he's turned over to be crucified. But you can read Matthew and Luke and Mark's account and you can get some pretty good information. And then we have where the guy's standing in the temple, right? When Jesus died, remember the recording of the priest standing in the temple? What happened with the veil? When did that happen? Evening sacrifice. So it gives you a good idea of the time that Jesus is on the cross. When did it go dark? Read Matthew. Brethren, you can figure this all out, the timing. Okay? So, Passover, he eats the evening, and it switches from the 13th to 14th with the boys. Lord's Supper is instituted. He goes through all the stuff with the appearing before the judicial bodies. And again, there's Pontius Pilate, Sanhedrin, Herod, that's Luke's account, back to Pontius Pilate, given up for crucifixion, goes to the cross, goes through all the things that's recorded that happens on the cross, and then you read John 19, and you get to verses 30 and 31, they say they're trying to get his body off the cross, because they're preparing the day of preparation, right? For that Sabbath was a high day. Well, what are they preparing for? The first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, right? Right? You guys with me? So, what was part of the preparation for the Feast of Unleavened Bread? Get the leaven out of your place. We don't want to be defiled by coming into contact with anything unclean, is the way the leaders of the Sanhedrin are thinking when they're giving up Jesus. So you've got to watch the terminology there. All this is happening on Passover. When all this happens, Jesus goes on the cross, boom, on Passover, just like he's supposed to, according to prophecy. Okay? And then they got to get him down and get him into the tomb before sundown because that's when the next day starts. That's that high day. So that proves that Jesus came down off the cross, went into the tomb, and if you read closely, it says they put him in a tomb that was nearby because of the whole thing to have to do with the high day of the Sabbath coming on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's in John, Gospel of John. Boom! In he goes. While it's still light. They roll the rock, right? So he goes in on that first day, that Passover day, before it gets dark. And so I said, now do the timing. And pay attention to John 19 and 20. Let's just say they put him in on Friday afternoon. Let's just do this one more time for everybody's sake, just in case you weren't here last week. Okay. Just a minute. Here we go.
Before you do that. So, as far as numbers of the month... So, Jesus would have been crucified on the 14th.
Correct.
The Holy Convocation is the 15th.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Are you all with Mr. Wilson? Okay.
Am I supposed to have a question or an answer?
Well, that one caused the mic to come right out of my pocket. I mean, sure, whatever you want, question or answer.
Well, for some reason in my notes I have it written down that the day after Passover was the day of first fruits, but that's not until he's raised, right?
That's correct.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah, that was from last week. That was fun. I use humor, so please, I'm not trying to mock anybody when I do that. I have to be careful. After Passover. That's correct. That's right, Levi. You got it right. So, if you pay attention, John 19 and 20. Well, let's go. Let's just use Friday. Okay, any part of a day that you do anything, when the sun's up, that's considered a day in the Jewish mindset. And any time of the night, when it's dark, is night. Remember, he said 3 days and three nights. He did not say 3 days. You guys catch that? It's important because he's saying it's going to be light time and night time. Does that help? Friday, he goes in. Let's give him credit. He goes in during the day before it got dark. So that'd be the first day, right? Let's say it's Friday night. Friday. It's the day he was crucified. Goes in Friday. Day one, right? Friday night. Day one, correct? You guys with me so far? I'm trying to slow down, not go too fast. Kind of like Vince Lombardi. Boys, this is a football, okay? All right, so, and I'm not trying to talk down to anybody. You got to do this with people because they can't think it through. They get just totally confused, what I'm telling you right now. So day one, Friday. Night one, Friday night. Day two, the sun comes up, it's light out. That'd be day two on Saturday, correct? Are you guys still with me? Am I doing anything? Okay. Sun goes down on Saturday, that's night two, correct? Okay, now, somebody go to John chapter 20 for me. And when you're there, go here. Or there. I want a guy.
Here.
Okay, who said it back there first? Okay, Lorenzo. All right, read the first couple of verses, John 20.
All right. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark.
Whoa, why miss that? Would you reread that?
While it was still dark.
I'm not sure I caught that. One more time.
While it was still dark.
Okay.
And saw the stone already taken away from the tomb. So she ran and came to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him."
Okay. When did Jesus come out of the tomb? What day of the week? First day of the week, because that would have switched to the first day of the week on Saturday night, right? What does John 20 there say? What time was it when they arrived at the tomb? Was it light or night? It was dark. I didn't write that, right? Brother, I want you to see that. I didn't write it. The Holy Spirit inspired John to pen that. Dark. He's gone already. Okay, how many days and how many nights did we get light and night doing our count there before? If he went in on Friday. How many days? How many nights? Two. It hasn't gotten light on Lord's Day, first day of the week yet, to make it daytime. You've got to pay attention, brethren. It's not 3 days he says he's going to be in the belly of the beast, belly of the earth. It's 3 days and three nights. It's very specific. It doesn't work if he goes in on a Friday. Now, I've had conversations with people, and I'm telling you, their head has exploded when I've done this. Well, that can't be right. I know just why we go. Well, just because somebody says that's the way it's always been, is that the way it's supposed to always be? You know, hey, they used to always kill the firstborn over in this country because that was the way they sacrificed an offering to their God that was acceptable. So we should do it in this country? Well, no. Why not? It's wrong. Okay, what did I just prove to you? The math doesn't add up. It's wrong. Okay? Now, if he goes in on a Thursday and it's Passover, Thursday afternoon before the sun goes down, day one, right? It's a portion of a day he went in. Right? He's in the tomb during the day, correct? Thursday night, one night. Right? Friday day two. Friday night, day three. You guys aren't listening, are you? Okay, you got 1 day, 2 days, two nights so far with Thursday, Friday, okay? Saturday, sun comes up, that's your third day, right? Third day of light. Saturday, the sun goes down, it's now Lord's Day, but that's now your third period of nighttime, correct? And then Jesus is up and out of the tomb before what came up on Lord's Day? Before the sun came up. What did Jesus say? No sign will be given you. Now, do you think he's going to fulfill it exactly or kind of be close? What do you guys think? How does that work? Is it okay to be in the neighborhood? No. Specifically. Now, if you tally it that way, it works perfectly. 3 days, 3 nights, because he's out of the tomb before the sun comes up on Lord's Day. Otherwise, that'd be 4 days and 3 nights, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? Are you seeing how amazing God is? Okay, Mike.
With that statement in mind, all of these things are happening in such a timeline that's very specific, all being done by varying types of men in varying types of positions and of offices and varying. The power of God is amazing. Because this, as you well mentioned, it's not these. He didn't ballpark these things; they happen in very specific moments, orchestrated all through the varying types of men of different beliefs and whatnot. That's amazing.
Okay, Mr. Wilson.
Two things. Number one, I think you should publish something on this, because most people do need this spoon-fed to them. It's like teaching algebra; you just got to lay it out. And then the second thing is, I think maybe we start our assemblies a little late in the day, don't we? Get a little earlier start before sunrise.
I'll let you administer that. And regarding your first request, Brad and I are getting together on Monday nights and putting that together presently, aren't we, Brad? Trying to put together something that we'll get it, and I'll have Brad reread it and make sure that it's as easy as grade school stuff to understand. That's my hope. Now, you got to understand, guys, you know, when you talk about this and present this to people, they just, I'm telling you, their brains explode. And they don't know how to handle it. It's so entrenched, the tradition of when he died, that they can't deal with it when you walk them through all the information. Remember, it says all scripture is inspired of God, right? And profitable for what? Well, you're all remembering one of the things that it says, right? Reproof and for what?
Correction.
Not just teaching, correction. That's what I was hoping somebody would get. You can teach, but in teaching there's also going to be some correction, isn't there? God's amazing. I'm telling you guys, I read scripture, it just blows me away. The depth of the wisdom of God. Oh, yeah, I think Paul wrote something about that. Oh, the wisdom of God, right? All right, so again, brethren, I want to go back to that, because I know last week I left some of you. I could see it in the audience. I'm looking at you, and your eyes are glazed over, and you're like, I am not getting this. And I know there are several of you, because I've had conversations with several of you. All right? Hopefully this little review here helps you to see what I was trying to point out. All right? How the time frame would work. Festivals, feast days, Sabbath days. Why John says what it says. So what would happen is he could die on a Thursday. That Friday would be a Sabbath because it's the first day of the feast on unleavened bread. No work. It would be like a Sabbath, right? It's a high day, first day of the feast. Then the next day could be a Saturday, another regular Sabbath, right? And then following that is the first day of the week. That gives you 3 days, 3 nights in the belly of the earth before Jesus pops out. That becomes the Lord's Day. Now here's the other cool thing. When Jesus popped out and appeared on that day, that was the day during that year of the Feast of Unleavened Bread that you had the Day of First Fruits that was offered. And it worked this way under the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The first day following the Sabbath, talking about the regular Sabbath, during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Hebrews, the Israelites, were to bring in the first sheaf of barley, which they had plucked out of the ground, and wave it, present it before God. So Jesus is called the first fruits from the dead. He got plucked out of the ground, didn't he? Came up and presented himself to man and God. Kind of cool. See how that all works? See, so everything's perfect in God's planning. And from the Word of God. It's perfect. But it shows you the misunderstanding that's out there in the religious marketplace. And that's just one example of many misunderstandings where people have gone away from the scripture and locked into the tradition of men. And I do believe Jesus warned very sternly about that in both Matthew 15 and the parallel passage in Mark 7. As people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me. Why does he say that? Because they've elevated the precepts of men to be equal to or greater than the doctrines, the teachings of God. So what do we have in the marketplace today? The doctrines of men override the obvious information that God gives us and the teaching from God's Word. You see that? It's everywhere in the instruction. It's in the religious marketplace because Satan is a clever operator. All right? Does that help? Everybody okay? If you have additional questions, feel free to ask me. When I get that prepared, that little deal that Brad and I are working on. And I'm just using his input so he can help me say, now this wouldn't be as easily understood. I want somebody to give me their perspective rather than me just writing out and saying, well, surely they'll understand this. You know, not necessarily. Sometimes you underestimate your audience as a teacher and a preacher, and sometimes you overestimate your audience of their understanding. So when it seems like I'm going back and being just childlike in the way I'm delivering things, brethren, it's on purpose. Because some of you still don't get it. And I'm doing it to make sure you get it. It's not to put you down. I'm just trying to make sure you get it. I've had guys come in and say, man, I'm having trouble comprehending what I'm reading. I'm having trouble comprehending what you're saying. They're being honest. God bless them. Then I can go back and say, here's how I need to present that. And you heard Mr. Wilson say, look, I got to spoon feed you guys. He didn't say you guys. He said, you got to do it this way because you have to spoon feed people. All right? So, Mr. Morrell, just a moment here.
One thing that clicked to me last week when we was going over this is you keep saying that each day begins at sundown. And it never really dawned on me until last week. You can actually go all the way back to Genesis 1. And it says right in Genesis 1, there was evening and there was morning, one day.
That's where they believe they got their timing from, by the way. And I shared that with a couple of someones yesterday, that very point, Super Dave, going back and explaining how they think they started logging time from sundown to sundown. Okay? All righty. We talked about that. That's done. Resurrection Day is coming, so you guys can contemplate all that. That's great conversational material with people that bring that up in the coming weeks. We talked about the Feast of Weeks. How was that calculated? Well, that was all calculated in Leviticus 23, and we'll go read it here in a moment, but based upon seven Sabbaths would count from the offering of that first fruit. You would count from that 7 weeks. Okay? From that Sabbath, 7 Sabbaths, and then the day after that Sabbath would be the day of Pentecost, as the New Testament calls it, or it's also called Feast of Weeks. Well, really not in the New Testament. I take it back. It's more in the Old Testament. That would become the Feast of Weeks, the day of the Feast of Weeks, the day of First Fruits, it's called also in the Old Testament. And it was a single day that this would take place. It's called Feast of Weeks, and that confuses people. You see why? Well, isn't there some weeks involved in what they're observing? No. It's just saying you've counted weeks to get to this day. All right? That's all it's about. And it's 7 weeks. All right, so let's go back to Leviticus 23. And I'm going very slow in this stuff, and some of you, I'm sure, are going, come on, speed it up. I understand. I know where you're coming from. I do. Be patient with our younger brethren. Or our brethren that just don't completely understand this stuff yet. Leviticus 23. It's going to give you the laws of religious festivals. Okay, verse 15. We just got done talking about the Feast of First Fruits that would be offered and the priest waving it back there in verses 10, 11, and on. And the other sacrifices that would be associated with that. Verse 15 of Leviticus 23. It's now going to tell you how to count to get to the Feast of Weeks. Verse 15, you shall also count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath. That would be the day of the first fruits, right? Right? You guys all with me? Okay. From the day when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering, there should be seven complete Sabbaths. So you count 7 weeks, don't you? Ching, 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 ching. You shall count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. So it's saying what? You're going to count seven Sabbaths on the 50th day. Excuse me, in verse 16. Then you shall present a new grain offering to Yahweh. That's in verse 16. That would be the wheat. The first grain offering was the barley. Pentecost, in the New Testament, this Feast of Weeks, was grain, wheat. 17. You shall bring in from your dwelling places two of bread. Now, the New American Standard inserts in italics loaves. Two loaves of bread for a wave offering. It goes on to say what it's comprised of. These are fairly large loaves of bread. Now, in the latter part of that verse, it says, they shall be a fine flour, baked with leaven. Remember, all the other offerings to God were supposed to be without leaven. Baked with leaven as first fruits to Yahweh. Along with the bread, you shall present 7 one-year-old male lambs without defect, and a bull of the herd and 2 rams. They are to be a burnt offering to Yahweh with their grain offerings and their libations. That's the drink offering. And an offering by fire of a soothing aroma to Yahweh. You shall also offer 1 male goat for sin offering, 2 male lambs 1 year old for sacrifice of peace offerings. The priest shall then wave them with the bread of the first fruits. Remember, this is called the Feast of Weeks, but now he's calling this bread, is called the bread of what? First fruits. So you can see it's called by several names here. For a wave offering with 2 lambs before Yahweh. They are to be holy to the Lord, or to Yahweh. And who do they go to? For the priest. Did you catch that? Who is these loaves of bread going to? Did you catch it? Who are they for? What would that mean? The high priest and his household, right? Correct? When you hear priest in the Old Testament, it's talking about the high priest and his descendants. It's not talking about the Levites. Again, I'm making sure we understand this. So who does this go to? Who do the first fruits of the leavened bread go to? High priest in particular, his family. Isn't that interesting?
That's all they eat, right?
Pardon me?
That's all they eat instead of the sacrifices, right?
Right. But this one here, in particular, I'm just talking about the Feast of Weeks, the day of the first fruits. The loaves were part of what was given to who? The priest. These leavened loaves. Now remember, that's the way the mind of the Israelite understands this, right? That's how they're taught. Okay. I'm okay with all the questions. I'm slowing it down to get them all answered as we go.
Could you say that again? The wheat was offered when?
On the Feast of Weeks, what is called Pentecost in the New Testament.
The first fruits, what was offered then?
Okay, we got to be careful. That's why I'm slowing this down. Back in the barley harvest, the first barley would be waved, and that was called the first day of first fruits. Then you would count from that day 7 complete Sabbaths, and then the first day of the week following that seventh Sabbath, which would be the first day of the week again, right? So Jesus Christ came out of the tomb as the first of the first fruits, the very first of the first fruits, on a Lord's Day, first day of the week. And then now the day of Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks, is observed on first day of the week.
The wheat is waved.
And then it's who gets to keep it?
So, yes. So, is there a connection then to what Jesus said in John chapter 12 about a grain of wheat falling to the earth and dying?
There's some connection there, yes. But there's a better connection. Roger, I'm coming to you. We'll get that other connection, Mike.
Is there some correlation then between Christ raising and then 50 days later, the day of Pentecost, and where the Christians... like the first fruit there?
Absolutely.
Okay, just wondering.
Yep, it's all foreshadowing. The first fruit to come, that's going to be presented to God, and then the next set of harvest would follow 50 days on the heels of that first fruit, and it would be the harvest of bounty to the Lord. Okay? There's a lot in this that maybe you haven't thought of, a lot. And I'm just trying to slow it down and give you some information and show you how awesome God puts this all together. But that's what's spoken of there in Leviticus 23. In verse 22, when you reap the harvest of your land, talking about the wheat harvest here, would also include the barley harvest, you shall not reap the very corners of your field nor gather the gleaning of your harvest, which falls to the ground. You are able to leave them for the needy and the alien. I am Yahweh, the Almighty. Okay? Adonai. Yahweh, Adonai. Stop here, just insert something real quick. We'll pick up next week. We're going to go to Deuteronomy 16, where it also talks about this. Numbers 28. We'll look at all the information on this feast. Okay? And kind of tie it all together. But I want you to think about this. Ruth. The book of Ruth. Ruth was a Gentile who had been married. By marriage is now a Israelite, so to speak. All right? And she comes back with Mara, all right, into the land, and that's where she meets a guy named Boaz. And if you read closely, chapter 3, it'll tell you that all these events took place during the barley harvest. When she was gleaning, because her mom said, go out and do that. This guy's got a lot of property. He's a good guy. Go do it on his property. Oh, and by the way, make yourself known to him. And she does. Boaz realizes she needs to be redeemed. She's lost a husband. She has no one. So he's going to redeem her and take her as his wife. And out of that marriage, that he gets to be the Goel, he's representative of Christ. But remember, she is in the family by means of marriage. You guys need to stop and think about that sometimes. Boaz takes her, makes her his wife, and two Boaz and Ruth is born Obed. Obed is the father of Jesse, who begets David, the line of the kings. Okay? Ruth is David's great-grandmother. Obed, you know what his name means? One who works in service. Gosh, Ephesians 4 jumps in my mind. Being equipped for the work of service. Hey, Obed. By reason of marriage. To who? Your Goel. Who's that? Jesus Christ. That book of Ruth has a little bit more meaning, doesn't it? Whole lot going on there. Just wanted to throw it out for you guys to consider. I'm just skimming the surface on that for you, too. See why I keep encouraging you, get your nose in a book, do some personal study without me or Luke or Jared or whoever. Get in there and start doing it on your own. Figure it out. We'll help you, but do it. Man, you are going to be so excited with what you discover. But you won't get excited about your Christianity or assemblies or anything until you start doing that. Once you do, I am not going to have to harangue you to get here for assembly. You'll want to be here going, what do I get to learn new today that I've missed? Amen? Thanks for your attention.